For the first time for many years, there is a banquet in the great dining hall of Navron House. I preside over the company, beautiful and charming. But this is no ordinary banquet. The men here are preparing to catch a French pirate, Jean-Benoît Aubry, a daring and adventurous man, and my lover. I am determined to keep the party going until he has time to finish the repairs to his ship and to sail away to safety.
Frenchman's Creek by Daphne du Maurier. Dramatized by Micheline Wandor. With Lorna Heilbronn as Donna St. Colum. Struan Roger as Jean. Michael Cochran as Harry. And Christopher Godwin as Rockingham. Part 3. A Midsummer Raid.
Wine, Rockingham.
Yes, please, Donna. The fever doesn't seem to have done you much harm, Donna. You look radiant.
Oh, don't be misled, Rockingham. Donna is an iceberg. I've not been married to her for close on 7 years without discovering that.
Harry, dear, you'll have some more wine.
Oh, well, my lord. Yes.
Come on. There.
We should have music, like my grandfather used to up there in the gallery. You know, when the old queen was still alive? Why does nobody have minstrels nowadays? I suppose the confounded Puritans killed them all, eh, Pembroke?
I consider that sort of foolery better dead. My father fought for Parliament, you know.
Is there much dancing then, at court?
Why, yes, Lord Godolphin. You should come to town, you know, when your wife has had her child.
A son, eh, Godolphin?
We live in hopes, Penrose.
Let's drink a toast to your son. Mm. More wine!
I saw you returning from your walk this evening, Donna. Did you find it wet in the woods?
And how is your wife bearing with the heat, Lord Godolphin?
I swear I've seen you before, dear lady, but I can't for the life of me recollect the time or the place.
We probably met when I came here as a bride, Lord Penrose.
No, it is an inflection in your voice. I believe I've heard it very recently.
Well, Donna has that effect on every man. They always feel that after seeing her, they have known her before.
I gather you speak from experience, Rockingham.
No, that would be telling.
Were you ever in Foy, Lady St. Colum?
Never, to my certain knowledge.
You've heard how I was robbed.
Yes, indeed. So very distressing for you. And you have had no news of your ship?
Ah, the Mary Fortune is snug in a French port by now, with no legal means of extracting her. However, I hope to settle accounts tonight, once and for all.
And you, my Lord Godolphin, were you also involved in the loss of Lord Penrose's ship?
I was, madam.
I trust you received no hurt.
Luckily, none. Like all Frenchmen, they prefer to run for it rather than face up to an honest fight.
Was their leader really the desperate man you have led me to believe?
20 times worse, madam. A most impudent, bloodthirsty, evil-looking rogue I've ever clapped eyes on. We have heard since that his ship carries a full complement of women on every voyage. Most of them poor wretches kidnapped from our villages.
He had a woman aboard the Mary Fortune. I could see her there on the deck above me, as plain as I see you now. Huh? A bold-faced baggage, if ever there was one, with a cut on her chin and hair all over her eyes. Some harlot from the French docks, no doubt. Mm-hmm.
And there's a poor wretched scrap of a boy who came knocking on Penrose's door. I'll take my oath he had a hand in it.
They'd never have slipped away from us but for the wind. You'd say it was the work of the devil himself. George here had the villain covered with his musket, but he missed him.
And how was that, my lord?
I was temporarily at a disadvantage, madam.
We've heard all about it, never fear, George. You lost your wig, didn't you? The rascal of a froggy pinched your wig.
Take no notice of them, dear Lord Godolphin. Have some more to drink. For after all, what is the loss of a wig? It might have been something so much more precious, and what would Lady Godolphin do then?
Gentlemen, we've wasted enough time. Have you all forgotten that we meet tonight on very desperate business?
Do you wish me to leave?
No, nonsense, nonsense. Don't let my wife stay at her own table, damn it. The party will fall flat without her.
Lady St. Colum, we could talk more freely if you were not here.
But of course, I understand. I would not dream of hindering in any way. Let me just pour you some more wine, and then I shall go. Piracy, after all, is the business of men.
Well, who the devil's that? Someone 2.5 hours late for supper?
We expect no one else.
This meeting was a secret.
Well, go and open the door, someone. But where the devil are all the servants?
I'll call them, Harry.
Hello there. You're asleep, damn you.
What's here, Harry? Someone has blown the candles out of this blackened pitch out here.
What? Did you tell your servants to go to bed, Harry?
Well, of course not. Give them another call, Rob, can't you?
There's not a light anywhere. Oh, goddammit, I'll unbolt the door myself.
It must be one of our people come to report. One of the men we posted in the woods. Someone has given us away and the fight's begun.
What the devil, Matthew?
Good evening, gentlemen. Please don't get up. I'll have you all covered. The first man who moves will get a bullet through his brain. Jean-Benoit Aubery, at your service. I will not keep you long.
Oh, your ladyship, I've heard a great deal about you and about your exquisite jewels. Perhaps you would give me your earrings. I have a pendant that would match rather well.
If any man's hand strays to his sword, that man will fall.
What the devil's going on?
Here, my earrings.
Thank you, your ladyship. I was told you had had a fever. I trust you are quite recovered.
I thought so, but your presence here will doubtless bring it back again.
Now, that would be a pity. My conscience would be uneasy. My cabin boy suffers from fever from time to time, but the sea air does wonders for him. You ought to try it. Ah, Lord Godolphin, I believe. Last time we met, I relieved you of your wig. This time, perhaps, I might take something a little more substantial. The decoration on your breast, the ribbons and the star. Your weapon also, I regret to say, is something I cannot leave upon your person. Ah, and good evening to you, sir. Lord Penrose, I believe. I must thank you for the gift of the Merry Fortune. You would not recognize her now, I swear. They have given her a new rig on my side of the channel and a coat of paint into the bargain. Your sword, sir, if you please. And what have you in your pockets?
You'll pay for this, goddamn you.
Possibly, but in the meantime, it is you who are paying. Your money, please, in this bag. Now, gentlemen, I wish to return to my ship. To have you join your fellows in the woods and give chase to me would, I fear, somewhat prejudice my plan. So I must ask you to take off your breeches and hand them to my men. Likewise, your stockings and your shoes.
Have you not made game of us enough?
The night is warm, you know, and yesterday was midsummer. Lady Saint-Colombe, perhaps you will be good enough to go into the salon. These gentlemen will not care to undress themselves before you in public, however much they may desire to do so in private.
Yes, sir.
Let me hold the door open for you.
I will give you 5 minutes. While you are disrobing, her ladyship and I will discuss the affairs of the day.
Jean, you are mad, quite mad.
Here are your earrings back and the necklace. I took it off your neck. Let me put it back. Come. Oh, your skin is so soft. Oh. I have not kissed you for nearly 24 hours, Donna.
How did you get into the house?
That cut William received from the fellow in the woods on his way back did not help. But he managed to open the door to us just as we planned. Oh, your servants, by the way, are all shut up in your game larder, tied back to back like the fellows we found on the Merry Fortune. Donna.
Yes?
Lamouette will sail within 2 hours if all goes well. I have no cabin boy. Do you know of a likely lad who would sail with me?
I do.
You remember how we talked on the ship?
Yes.
And we agreed that it was impossible for a woman to escape except for an hour and a day?
Yes.
This morning, when William brought me the news that you were no longer alone, I realized that our make-believe was over. From now on, Lamouette must sail other waters and find different hiding places. And although she will be free, and the men on board her free, her master will remain captive.
What do you mean?
I mean that I am bound to you, even as you are bound to me. From the very first, I knew that it would be so. When I came here in the winter and I lay upstairs in your room, my hands behind my head and
looked at your solemn portrait on the wall, I smiled to myself and said, "She and no other." And I waited, and I did nothing, for I knew that our time would come.
I guess that somewhere, in heaven knew what country, there was someone who was a part of my body and my brain, and that without him I was lost, like a straw blown by the wind. But it's too late. There is nothing we can do.
All day, as I worked on the ship, I thought and thought.
And?
You must decide, Donna, what you want to do. If we return safely to the ship through this cordon in the wood and hoist sail without delay and leave with the tide, we shall be down the coast by sunrise. If you want to come with me, William will take you to the bay.
Oh, sure.
I can't ask you to leave your children and come with me. Only you can decide that. I have loved you, Donna, in almost every mood. But mostly, I think, when you threw yourself down on the deck of the Mary Fortune in your cabin boy's breeches with blood on your face and the rain streaming down your torn shirt, and I looked at you and laughed, and a bullet whistled over your head.
Oh.
I must go, my darling Donna. Here, take your earrings and the bracelet. If you come to the bay, I will put off in a boat to have your answer. Remember, sunrise.
A draft comes from the open window. I close and bolt it and go to the dining room. There are the plates, the dishes, the bowls piled high with fruit, the silver goblets and the glasses. The chairs are pushed back as though the guests have just risen from supper and withdrawn. There is a strange, forlorn air about the table, like a still-life picture drawn by an amateur hand in which the food, the fruit, and the spilled wine lack life and reality.
My dear Donna, I see that your jewels have been returned to you.
Rockingham, there's blood on your shirt. What has happened?
What did you give in place of your jewels?
You are very serious, Rockingham. I should have thought this evening's jest would have amused you well.
You are right. It has amused me. That we could be disarmed and unbreached in so short a time by so few jesters is a royal prank. But that Donna St. Colum should look upon the leader of the jesters in the way she did, that I did not find amusing.
I do not know what you mean, Rockingham.
I now understand much that has been puzzling me. That servant of yours, William, a spy, of course, of the Frenchman's. Those walks of yours in the woods, that elusive look in your eye. Tonight I saw the man for whom that look was meant. Well, do you deny it?
I deny nothing.
Not a very pleasant ending for Donna St. Colum. You have never been inside a jail, have you? And the feeling of a rope around your neck as it tightens and chokes you? How would you like that, Donna?
All this because my Lord Rockingham fancies I smiled upon a pirate when he asked me for my jewels. Tell your story to Godolphin, to Penrose, to Harry even. They will say you are mad.
Supposing your Frenchman was caught and bound and brought before you, and we played with him a little, as they played with prisoners some 100 years ago, Donna, with you for an audience. I rather think that you would give yourself away.
We no longer burn our heretics at the stake.
But our pirates are hanged, drawn, and quartered, and their accomplices suffer the same fate.
Very well. Wake Harry from his drunken snoring. Fetch horses, fetch soldiers and weapons, and then when you have caught your pirate, you may hang us both side by side from the same tree.
You would not mind dying now, because you have had at last the thing you wanted all your life. Is that not true?
Yes, it is true, Rockingham.
And it might have been me.
Never! That I swear, never in this world.
If you had not left London, if you had not come down here to Navarone, it would have been me. Yes, though it were from boredom, idleness, from indifference, even from disgust, it would have been me.
No, Rockingham, never!
You bitch!
What are you doing?
I believe that I am going to kill you.
Keep away from me! He holds his knife high above his shoulder. He throws it straight at my throat. It strikes the ruby pendant on my neck, cracking it in two. I feel the cold steel slip away from me, pricking my skin, catching itself in the folds of my gown.
Now I have you.
I fall against the table. Somewhere beneath me is the knife.
Get away, you stupid animals!
My right hand finds the knife and closes upon it. I grip its cold hasp and I drive it upwards under his armpit. His soft flesh yields to the blade. Surprisingly easy, surprisingly warm, the blood running thick and fast to my hand. I can see a glimmer of pale light from the window in the gallery. I climb the stairs. Rockingham follows me on all fours like a dog. James! My son James! At last I know anger. I am raised, cold. A shield hangs on the wall, some trophy of a dead St. Colin. I tear it from its head, heavy and dusty with age. The weight of it drags me to my knees. Still Rockingham comes towards me. As he turns the corner of the stair, I hurl the shield at him, driving it full in his face. I want to lie down in the darkness, to sleep with my face between my hands. I want to dream of the coast of Brittany, golden as sunrise, the rocks about it jagged and crimson like the coast of Devon, the white breakers hurling themselves upon the sand, the spray throwing a fine mist onto the cliffs, the smell of it mingling with the warm earth and the grass. I want to forget the guttering candles in the dining hall, the smashed glass, the broken chairs, Rockingham's face when the knife touched his flesh.
Are you all right? Donna? Are you better?
Harry, what has happened? Where am I?
Rock's dead. The best friend I've ever had. He saved your life, you know. He must have fought that devil single-handed, alone there in the darkness. Oh, my poor beautiful, my poor sweet.
What is the time?
Nearly noon, I believe. You've been asleep.
I've been sleeping here all morning until noon.
Try and forget the confounded goddamn night. It's all my fault. I'll never drink again, I swear it. I ought to have stopped it all. But you shall have your revenge, I promise you that. We've caught him, you know.
Caught whom?
Well, the Frenchman, of course. The devil who killed Rock and would have killed you too. The ship's gone and the rest of his crew, but we've got him, the leader, the damn pirate. So, you needn't worry anymore. He didn't molest you in any way, did he, Donna?
No, Harry. He did nothing to offend me.
I'll sell the land and house and we'll go and live in Hampshire. I'll live the life of a country gentleman and I'll teach young James to ride and to hawk. How would you like that, eh?
I don't know, Harry.
What happened here? You were with him, weren't you, in the salon?
He gave me back my jewels and then he went.
He must have come back and tried to follow you upstairs. You fainted in the passage by your room.
I don't understand. Was he wounded?
God bless me, no. He'll hang without a scratch on him. He and three other scoundrels made for a point below Helford to join their vessel in mid-river. When Penrose got down there, the fellows were swimming out to the ship, and their leader was on the beach, cool as a blade of steel, fighting two of our people at once while his men got away. The ship sailed out of Helford with a roaring tide under her and a fair wind on her quarter. The Frenchman watched her go, and God damn it, he was laughing, Penrose said.
Where have they taken him?
George Godolphin has him in the keep, strongly guarded, and therefore moving him up to Exeter or Bristol.
What then?
Why, they'll hang him, Donna. Unless George Godolphin and Penrose and the others save His Majesty's subjects the trouble of doing so, and hang him on Saturday midday as a treat to the people.
Would that be within the law?
No, but I don't think His Majesty would trouble us for a reason.
I see. I am very tired now, Harry.
Oh, I want to see you well. That's all I care about, dammit. To see you well and happy. We'll go to Hampshire then, shall we?
Yes, Harry. We'll go to Hampshire. I must go and see Godolphin. I must persuade him to let me visit his prisoner. Jean has saved his ship, and he has saved his crew. Now, wherever he is, he will be thinking calmly, planning some method of escape for himself. If he can face his enemies in this way, then I must not be afraid of what I have to do. Come in. Phew! Whatever is the matter?
Oh, I've done something very wicked. Last night, when there was all that terrible to-do and poor Lord Rockingham was killed, I hid William in the nursery. He told me that Sir Harry and the other gentlemen would kill him if he was found, that the French pirate was his master. And instead of giving him up, my lady, I made him a bed on the floor beside the children. And after breakfast, when the gentlemen were all away searching for him, I let him out, my lady, by the side door. And no one knows anything about it but you and me.
It's all right, Prue. You are a good and faithful girl to tell me this. Where is William now?
He asked for you. And I told him you were in bed, very shocked and exhausted because Lord Rockingham had been killed that night. At that, he seemed to think for a while, and then he said he had friends who would shelter him, and that he would be there if you wished to send word to him.
Very well, Prue. Say nothing of this to anyone. Now, I must get up. Prue, whatever happens, go on as you have always done, won't you? Look after the children and love them well.
Of course, my lady.
Harry, I want you to do something for me.
Anything in the world? What is it?
I want you to leave Navron today and take Prue and the children with you to Hampshire. I shall follow you tomorrow.
They'll probably be hanging their fellow tomorrow. You would like to see him hanged, would you not? Well, we could fix it for 9 in the morning, perhaps, and then start our journey afterwards.
Have you ever seen a man hanged?
Yes. There is little to it, I admit, but this is rather different. Damn it, Donna, the fellow murdered poor Rock and would have killed you too. You mean to say you have no wish for revenge?
Revenge doesn't concern me.
Yes, but what will George Godolphin say?
I shall explain to him this afternoon after you have gone.
Oh, God damn it, Donna, shall I ever understand you?
No, Harry, but it does not matter very much.
It does matter. It makes life most confounded hell for the both of us.
Do you really think that?
Oh,
damn me, I don't know what to think. I only know I'd give anything, anything in the world to make you happy. The cursed trouble is, I don't know how to.
I shall be 30 in 3 weeks' time. Perhaps as I grow older, I shall grow wiser.
I don't want you any wiser. I want you as you are. I believe you've still got that damn fever on you.
No, I have no fever.
Your eyes are strange. Your expression has changed. Oh, God damn it, I don't know what it is.
I told you I'm getting older. It's my age you can see in my eyes.
Ah, well, I suppose I'm a fool and a blockhead. And will have to spend the rest of my days wondering what the hell has happened to you.
I rather think you will, Harry. Suddenly, all is noise and confusion. Henrietta and James are like puppies, delighted to be going on a journey. They don't mind leaving Navron. In a month's time, they will be playing in the Hampshire fields and Cornwall will be forgotten. I wave and blow kisses until the carriage turns the corner and I can see the children no more. Now that everyone has left, I walk into the garden. The house already has a strange, deserted appearance, as though it knows that soon the shutters will be drawn, the doors bolted. No sunshine, no voices, no laughter. Here beneath this tree, Lord Godolphin called upon me for the first time, surprising me with my ringlets in disorder and flowers behind my ears. There were bluebells in the woods, and the bracken was young. Now it is waist-high and dark green. So much loveliness, swiftly come and swiftly gone. This is the last time I shall look upon it all, for I shall never come to Navron again. Part of me will linger here forever, a footstep running tiptoe to the creek, the touch of my hand on a tree, the imprint of my body in the long grass. Perhaps one day, in after years, someone will wander there and listen to the silence as I have done, and catch the whisper of the dreams that I dreamt here in midsummer, under the hot sun and the white sky. But now I have work to do. A rescue plan.
Stable boy, saddle a horse for me. I am going riding.
William, open the door. This is Lady St. Colum from Navron.
My lady, thank God.
I thought I should find you here.
Come into the kitchen, quickly.
How is your arm?
Oh, it is much better. Just a little weak. Please, sit down.
Prue gave me your message.
My lady, what can I say to you? I would have died for you that night, and instead I lay like a sick child on the floor of the nursery.
You could not help it. You were wounded. But I have not come to talk about that.
What then?
I sent Sir Harry, Prue, and the children away from Navron today. You know what has happened.
I know, my lady, that the ship was lucky enough to escape with the crew safe aboard, but that my master lies a prisoner in the care of Lord Godolphin.
Time is short, William, for his lordship and the others may take the law into their own hands. We have only a few hours. Listen to me, William. This pistol is for Jean. When I leave you now, I shall proceed to his lordship's and gain admittance to the keep. It should not prove difficult, for his lordship is a fool.
But that is dangerous and foolhardy, my lady.
I have a plan, William. We shall need horses.
That should not prove impossible.
Good. I shall return here after my visit to Lord Godolphin and tell you what has been arranged.
Very well, my lady.
In 3 days' time or less, perhaps, you will see the cliffs of Brittany again. You will be home, William. There is the grey outline of Godolphin's house. The squat tower and strong walls of the keep. One narrow slit in the tower, midway between the battlement and the ground. As I pass beneath it, my heart beats strongly. That must be my Frenchman's prison. Perhaps he can hear the sound of my horse. Perhaps he can even see me.
I help you, madam?
Tell Lord Godolphin that Lady St. Colum has come to visit him.
Very well, madam.
What is happening in the park?
They are preparing the gallows for the Frenchman, madam.
Hurry and tell your master I am here.
Certainly, madam.
My very humble apologies, madam. I fear I've kept you waiting. My wife is in labor. The physician is with her ladyship now. He seems to think nothing is likely to occur until late evening.
My dear Lord Godolphin, you must forgive me. Had I known, I would never have disturbed you. But I bring apologies from Harry. Unfortunately, he has had to return to London.
Harry left for town? But it was all arranged. Half the countryside will be gathered here tomorrow. Harry was most insistent that he must see the Frenchman hanged.
He asked most humbly for your forgiveness, but the matter was really pressing. His Majesty himself, I believe, is concerned about it.
Oh, well, actually, madam, under such circumstances, I can understand. But it is a pity, a very great pity. The occasion is so unusual and such a triumph. And it looks as though we may celebrate something else at the same time.
Wait until you have been a father a dozen times.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Dear,
oh, dear Lord Godolphin, I wish I could distract you. I am sure your wife is in no danger at all. Ah, is that the keep where the Frenchman is imprisoned?
Yes, madam. He spends his time, so his jailers tell me, in drawing birds on a sheet of paper. The fellow is mad, of course.
Of course.
Congratulations are pouring in upon me from all over the county. I flatter myself that I've earned them. Mm. It was I, you know, who disarmed the scoundrel.
How courageous of you.
It is true he gave his sword into my hands, but nevertheless it was to me he gave it.
I shall make a great story of it at court, Lord Godolphin. His Majesty will be very impressed with your handling of the whole affair.
Oh, you flatter me, madam.
Harry would agree with me, I know. I wish I had some souvenir of the Frenchman to show His Majesty. Do you think he might give me one of his drawings?
I am sure I can procure one for you.
I have forgotten so much, heaven be praised, of that fearful night, that I cannot now recollect his appearance, except that he was extremely large and fierce and appallingly ugly.
Oh, well, I should not describe him so. He's not so large a man as myself, and like all Frenchmen, has a sly rather than an ugly face.
What a pity I shall not be able to give an accurate description of him to His Majesty.
But you will see him hang tomorrow.
Alas, no. I go to rejoin Harry and the children.
Oh. I suppose I could permit you a glimpse of the rascal in his cell. Surely the fellow so terrified you that you could not bear to see him.
Today, Lord Godolphin, is so different from the other night. I have you to protect me. And the Frenchman is unarmed. I would so much like to paint a picture to His Majesty of the notorious pirate, caught and put to death by the most faithful of his Cornish subjects.
Then you shall, madam. You shall. Oh, but Lucy...
The physician is with your wife. First, babies take their time.
Oh, my poor Lucy. If only I could have spared her this ordeal.
It will all be over very soon. Come, shall we go?
Who's there?
Lord Godolphin, open up. I brought Lady St. Colum to glance at our prisoner.
He won't be fit for a lady to see this time tomorrow.
That is why her ladyship has come today. Take us to his cell.
Certainly. Jim? Keep an eye out.
Right-o, sir.
He
is quite secure, I see.
This is the only door, and this is the only stair. The men below are always on guard.
There he sits, just as he did in his cabin on board La Mouette.
Wait outside.
Yes, my lord.
Stand up, prisoner. This is Lady St. Cullum. She's most disappointed that she cannot see you hang tomorrow, and she wishes to take one of your drawings to His Majesty as a souvenir of one of the biggest blackguards that ever troubled his faithful subjects.
The Lady St. Cullum is very welcome. I can offer her a fair selection. What is your favorite bird, madame?
I am not sure. Sometimes I think it is a nightjar.
I regret I cannot offer you a nightjar. You see, when I last heard one, I was so intent upon another occupation that I did not observe the nightjar as clearly as I might have done.
You mean you were so intent upon robbing one of my friends of his possessions that you gave no thought to anything else?
My lord, I've never before heard the occupation in question so delicately described.
I think you have not given this herring gull his full plumage.
Now, the drawing is unfinished, madame. This seagull dropped one of its feathers in flight. However, they seldom venture far to sea. I mean, this particular gull, for instance, is probably only 10 miles from the coast at the present moment.
No doubt tonight he will return again to the shore in search of the feather he has lost.
Your ladyship knows little of ornithology. I never heard of a seagull picking up feathers.
I had a feather mattress as a child. I remember the feathers became loose after a while, and one of them fluttered from the window of my bedroom and fell into the garden below. Of course, the window was a large one. Not like the slit that gives light to this cell.
No, of course.
Did they ever blow under the door?
That I can't remember. I think that even a feather would have difficulty in passing beneath the door. Unless, of course, it was given assistance, like a strong breath of air, you know, say, the draught from the barrel of a pistol.
Uh-huh.
But I must choose my drawing. This Thunderling, I wonder if this would please His Majesty. My lord, Do I hear wheels upon the drive? Perhaps the physician is departing.
He should not leave without consulting me first. Hold there! Unlock the door!
So many drawings to choose from. I pass the pistol from my riding habit onto the table. Jean covers it with his drawings. I cannot decide between the seagull and the Thunderling. Oh, do not wait for me, my lord. A woman can never make up her mind. I will follow you in a minute or two.
I must see the physician. If you'll excuse me, madam. Guard, remain here with her ladyship.
I hope for your sake that it proves to be a boy, guard. There will be more ale for you.
I am not the only cause for excitement.
By midday, you will be dangling from the tree while the rest of us drink to the future, Lord Godolphin.
It seems rather hard that neither the prisoner nor myself will be here to drink the health of the son and heir. I know. Suppose we three drink now while his lordship is with the physician.
Thank you, my lady. Jim, bring 3 months of ale. If his lordship catches us, there'll be the devil to pay.
What is your name?
Zachariah Smith, my lady.
Very well, Zachariah. If trouble comes of this, I will plead your case with the king himself.
Oh, thank you, lady. Lad. Well, long life to your ladyship. Full purse. And a good appetite to myself. And to you, sir, a speedy death.
Long life to the future Godolphin.
And to Lady Godolphin, who is at this moment suffering some discomfort.
Zachariah Smith, are you a married man?
Twice married, and the father of 14.
Then you know what his lordship is enduring at this moment. However, with so able a physician as Dr. Williams, there will be little cause for anxiety. You know the doctor well, I suppose?
I know, my lady. I come from the north coast. I'm not a local man.
Dr. Williams is a funny little fellow, with a round, solemn face and a mouth like a button. I have heard it said that he is as good a judge of ale as any man living.
Then it is a great pity that he does not drink with us now. Perhaps he will do so later when his day's work is finished and he is made a father of Lord Godolphin.
Which will not be much before midnight.
All nine of my boys were born as the clock struck 12.
When I see Dr. Williams, I will tell him that Zachariah Smith will be pleased to drink a mug of ale with him.
Your health, my lady.
Zachariah, you will remember this evening for the rest of your life.
If Lord Godolphin has a son, there'll be so much rejoicing on the estate that we may forget to hang you in the morning.
Well, I have chosen my drawing. Goodbye, Frenchman. May you slip away tomorrow as easily as the feather did from my mattress.
It will depend upon the quantity of ale that my jailer consumes tonight with Dr. Williams.
He'll have to boast a stout head if he can beat mine.
Goodbye, Lady Saint-Colombe.
Cold-blooded, isn't he, for a man about to die? They say these Frenchmen have no feelings.
You are a good fellow, Zachariah. I won't forget to tell the physician to call upon you. A little man, remember, with a mouth like a button. And not a word to his lordship. The magnolia scent is heavy and sweet. The gold crescent of this new moon high above the dark trees. In the nursery, the beds are stripped, the carpets taken up. The curtains are drawn, and the air is already hot and unused. Now, my clothes. Stockings, breeches, patched and coloured shirt. I shall play the boy again and escape from my woman's clothes. A handkerchief to wind round my hair and a leather strap for my waist. Lady Donna St. Colum is asleep and dreaming, and the cabin boy is about to wake. How dark the hall is. What if Rockingham's ghost should return, crouching there, his knife in his hand? Stupid. Rockingham is dead. I have nothing to fear. Not from him, at any rate.
William, is that you?
I have the horses, my lady. Come.
Oh, good heavens, Dr. Williams. You look so smart, and I do believe you are wearing a wig.
I feel ridiculous, my lady.
You must not forget, my William, that you are a physician and I am a cabin boy. You must drop my lady and call me plain Tom.
Oh, my lady, I should be too embarrassed.
Good heavens, William. Physicians should never be embarrassed, especially when they have just brought sons and heirs into the world. It's about half a mile. We'll leave the horses under cover of the trees and go on foot to the park gates. Look, William. There's a light on the first floor. The sun and air still tarries. That's the physician's carriage. They'll be busy enough. Are you ready?
Yes, my lady.
Go on, then.
Is there one Zachariah with him?
Who wants him?
Dr. Williams from Helston.
So? Her ladyship didn't forget her promise. Come inside, sir. Was it a boy?
It was indeed, my friend. A fine boy, and the image of his lordship. I've brought some ale for us.
Well, sir, I have fathered 14, and I may say I know the business as well as you. What was the weight of the child?
The weight. Now, let me see. Round about
4 pounds, I should say, though I cannot recollect the exact figure.
You call that a fine boy? Why, curse me, sir, the child would never live. My youngest turned the scale at 11 pounds when he was born, and he looked a shrimp at that.
Oh, did I say 4? A mistake, of course. Now I've come to remember it, it was somewhere around 14.
14?
15, or even 16 pounds.
God save you, sir, but that's something over the odds. Oh, it's her ladyship you should look to, and not the child. Is she well?
Oh, very well, and in excellent spirit.
Ah, and she's a pluckier woman than I'd ever give her credit for. Well, sir, it seems to me you deserve another drink.
Oh,
I warrant they don't brew stuff like that in France. I took some ale just now to my prisoner. You'll scarcely credit me, sir, but he's a cold-blooded fish for a dying man, as you might say. He quaffed his ale in one drop. Will you have another, doctor?
Oh, thank you, my man. I should be very interested to see the prisoner.
It's irregular, sir, of course. When a man is going to be hanged in the morning, even if he is a Frenchman and a pirate, you can't exactly wish him ill, can you? Thank you, sir. You're a true gentleman. When my wife is expecting again, I shall think of you. Come along. It's just up here.
Now then. Is Dr. Williams within?
What do you want with him?
They sent word from the house. Her ladyship's been taken worse. Open up. I must talk to Dr. Williams.
All right, lad. Come in. Come in. Zachariah! They want the doctor up at the house yonder. Hey! What the devil are you doing? Get away from the door.
I am here, Shaw.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Oh, well done. Give me a handkerchief, Donna. Forget.
There you are.
He won't move for a while. Have you got him, William?
Man is sleeping like a baby.
Open the door, Donna, to see if the road is clear.
Hurry! The physician is leaving!
By heaven, what a stroke of luck!
Shaw! What are you doing? He'll see you! Are you mad?
Who there? Stop!
What do you want? Did you give his lordship an heir, then? There are twin daughters up at the hall, and I'll thank you to take your hands off my carriage window and let me pass.
Ah, but you'll give us a ride first, won't you?
Move aside, my good man!
Yeah! Climb up beside me, Donna.
We'll ride in style. Get inside, William.
Yes, and give the doctor a glass of ale if you have any left. By the Lord, he's had a harder time tonight than we have had these last few minutes.
Open the park gate! Your master has twin daughters and the physician wants his supper. And that's for me and my cabin boy. We've had enough ale this night to last us for 30 years.
We are bound for petition for all I care. My last night in the world. I am to be hanged in the morning. Faster! Faster!
Somewhere back on the road lies a carriage tumbled in a ditch. A horse without bridle or rein grazes behind a hedge. A physician walks along the high road in search of his supper. Guards lie bound and gagged upon a dungeon floor. It is long past midnight now, darker than it will ever be again. The stars are clustered thick like little pinpricks of light. And the crescent moon has gone. There is no wind, and the sky has the strange clarity and radiance of midsummer.
There, the fire is ready, my Donna. Tonight I have no spit and no fish. My cabin boy must be content with burnt bread instead. This is all we have for supper. Here. And so you fought a man, my Donna, and he died on the floor of Navron House.
How did you know?
Because I was accused of his murder.
Do you remember how upset I was when I caught my first fish? I cried when you killed it. But it was different that night. At first I was afraid, then I became angry.
What made you angry?
It was James. James who woke and cried, and suddenly I was no longer afraid. That made me able to throw the shield at Rockingham. I did not mean to kill him.
I think that Lady Saint-Coulomb will never more roister in the streets of London, for she has had her measure of adventure.
The Lady Saint-Coulomb will become a gracious matron and smile upon her servants and tenants and the village folk. One day she will have grandchildren about her knee and will tell them the story of the pirate who escaped.
And what will happen to the cabin boy?
The cabin boy will vigil sometimes in the night and tear his nails and beat his pillow. Then he will fall asleep and dream again. And you?
There is a house in Brittany where once lived a man called Jean Benoit Aubry. He will go back and cover the bare walls from floor to ceiling with pictures of birds and portraits of his cabin boy. As the years go by, the portraits of the cabin boy will become blurred and indistinct.
In what part of Brittany does Jean Benoit Aubry have his house?
In Finistère, which means, Donna, the Land's End.
I can see the rugged cliffs and the scarred face of the headland. I can hear the sea crash against the rocks, the gulls cry. I know how the sun will beat upon the cliffs so that the grass becomes parched and thirsty and dry, and how sometimes a soft wind will blow from the west with mist and rain.
There is a jagged piece of rock which runs out into the Atlantic. They call it La Pointe du Var. No trees can live upon it and no blade of grass, for it is swept by the west wind. But in the sea beyond the point, two tides meet and surge together, and the surf foams and the spray rises 50 feet into the air.
It is chilly. Hold me, Jean.
Donna, come with me.
Tomorrow, you will be on board La Mouette and hold the wheel in your hand and feel the deck under your feet.
You can be there too.
How can I, Jean?
Oh, I wonder how it was that the world first went amiss and people forgot how to live and to love and to be happy.
We have the river and these hills to ourselves for tonight. Kiss me, Jean.
Oh, my love, my love, my love, my love.
When the day came, there was a whiteness and a cold clarity we had never known before. The sky was hard and bright, and the sea lay at our feet like a sheet of silver.
Look, Donna.
La Mouette, her masts crimson, her sails full.
La Mouette is returning for her master.
I love you, Jean.
Donna.
Remember me, Jean.
Always.
The boat is waiting. You must go.
You are shivering, Donna.
Hurry, please, Jean. Hurry, go! Jean climbed into the waiting fishing boat and hoisted the sail on the single mast. It seemed that this moment was part of another time long ago, when I stood upon a headland and looked out across the sea and saw La Muette drifting on the horizon like a symbol of escape. I felt as though I had no part in the breaking of the day. I belonged to another age and another world. She was a painted ship on a still white sea.
Goodbye, Donna.
The shingle was cold on my bare feet, and the waves splashed me. Then, out of the sea rose the sun, red like a ball of fire.
In the final episode of Frenchman's Creek by Daphne du Maurier, Donna St. Colum was played by Lorna Heilbronn, and Jean by Struan Roger. William was Michael Tudor Barnes, Lord Godolphin, Norman Bird, and Jim, Vincent Brimble. Smith was played by Michael Kilgariff, and the physician was Joe Dunlop. Technical presentation was by Richard Beedsmore, assisted by Michael Etherden and Colin Guthrie. Frenchman's Creek by Daphne du Maurier was dramatized for radio by Micheline Wandor and directed by Cherry Cookson.